Hey guys, we're going to be taking a bit of a break this week and we will be back next week with a brand new episode. We'll be kicking off with Girl Up, a UN Foundation initiative that trains young women to become leaders creating change for girls around the world. In the meantime, we thought we'd rebroadcast one of our favorite episodes on the podcast. It's Dr. Crystal Johnson from NASA. I really hope you enjoyed and please make sure you stick around until the end to hear the latest Fairy God Boss insights. Thanks again for tuning in this week, guys, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode.
NASA has been pretty much at the forefront for allowing women to play a significant role in technical fields. And that is evident as you, if you get a chance to see Hidden Figures, we have had women doing these kinds of technical roles within this agency for quite a while now. And so that's a wonderful thing. However, even within NASA and within even Langley, which is where the women of Hidden Figures were based, it still has not been an equal seat at the table.
I'm Michelle King, and this is She Innovates, a podcast that shares the stories, challenges, and triumphs of women across innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. Today, we're absolutely honored to be chatting with Dr. Crystal Johnson, NASA's Deputy Director for Technology and Research Investments. On this episode, Dr. Johnson shares with us her extraordinary career at NASA and the challenges she's experienced as a woman in STEM. So those are fields that include a focus on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Given Dr. Johnson's role, I asked her if she sees herself in the movie Hidden Figures. The film portrays the experience of three talented African-American women who worked at NASA Langley in 1961, and it tackles important issues like institutional racism and sexism. So Dr. Johnson, welcome. You know, it's so great to have you on our show.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
I just wondered if we could maybe get started by getting you to share with listeners, you know, how you started your journey with NASA and maybe what led you to be interested in having a career in this particular field.
Yes. So I started working with NASA because I was in college at Lincoln University. There was a program that I was in called Lincoln Aerospace Engineering Recruitment Program. Since it was funded under a NASA program, you had to go to a NASA center to work for one summer as an intern, a summer intern. And so I decided to go to the Langley Research Center. And when they gave me my assignment, they said that I was assigned to a physics laboratory. And I was like, physics? What in the world? Because, you know, at that point in time, my major was in computer engineering. And so I was like, okay, so what in the world is this physics thing about? And so I was a little bummed, but I was thinking, okay, well, you look for a silver lining in every single cloud, so I'm going to stay positive about this. And so when I got to the laboratory, they walked me up to this door, and there was a big, you know, hazard, laser, danger inside. And so I was like, okay, this is interesting. And so when they opened the door, they handed me some goggles, and they said, don't lean your head down to the level of the table because there are stray laser lights going around the room, and it could zap you in your eye, and it could blind you. And I was like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? And so that summer, I actually worked at Langley Research Center for the whole summer in laser design and development, and it was just the coolest thing, something that was totally unexpected, something that was totally outside of my realm of even thinking about anything like that. But just the fact that I had the hands-on experience in the environment, working with the engineers and seeing the real cool applications of this, a lot of different applications, looking at, you know, tracking hurricanes and storms and understanding how much, you know, rain we're going to be having falling in different areas. There were so many different applications that were just really cool. And so the fact that I had the hands-on experience sold me. And from that day on, I never ended up leaving NASA.
Wow. I mean, that is just so cool. How many years exactly have you been working at NASA?
Since the summer of 1985.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I mean, you've really had a long career with NASA then. You know, over the course of that career, how many missions have you been a part of?
Well, I've been a part of some of every kind of mission, a lot of different missions, I'll put it that way. When I first started out, I was designing and building laser systems for remote sensing of the atmosphere. I was invited to go to Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico. they invited me to spend a couple of weeks in the desert with them, integrating my system into theirs and taking these measurements. And that was one of the most incredible experiences that I have ever had with the laser development activities in the laboratory. And then I went to headquarters and ended up being responsible for all of the Earth probe missions. So anything that was probing the Earth to answer a specific scientific question were under my area of responsibility. And so I have participated in, you know, many, many, many launches of many types of missions. I've done the international negotiations with other countries to partner with the United States to do these kinds of missions, and have had a really, really great time doing it.
Dr. Johnson has not only led some of the most groundbreaking research and programs at NASA, but she's also been involved with incredible initiatives that encourage and support young women into STEM. So Dr. Johnson, you know, given your experience working in this field, you know, what do you think some of the challenges are that women face in STEM?
Yeah, I would say that one of the biggest challenges that I've faced as a woman in STEM is kind of breaking into the good old boy network. Because for many, many years at NASA and other, you know, scientific or technical organizations, the makeup has been mostly white males. And there have been other races that have been able to be incorporated. But in terms of getting the women in, women have come in softer fields, not necessarily the strong technical. NASA has been pretty much at the forefront for allowing women to play a significant role in technical fields. And that is evident as you, if you get a chance to see Hidden Figures, we have had women doing these kinds of technical roles within this agency for quite a while now. And so that's a wonderful thing. However, even within NASA and within even Langley, which is where the women of Hidden Figures were based, it still has not been an equal seat at the table. It has been, you have this information and we kind of have to work with you, so come on in and let's do that. And so being able to have the women have an equal seat at the table has been a challenge and will continue to be a challenge in many places.
I agree, Dr. Johnson. I really do. You know, I think these challenges will be around for a while. But I just wonder, you know, given that, what are some of the solutions? What can we do to overcome some of these challenges in STEM and in the workplace in general?
I think that it's also a matter of making sure that the women have those high visibility assignments. Because if, like for me, I've been really responsible for making sure that we have an environment that sustains, that supports and sustains women in STEM. But when it comes to having, you know, we can do things like have diverse selection panels and make sure that you, you know, cast a really wide net to try to bring in as many good people as you possibly can. If the women haven't had those high profile assignments to make them the best qualified person for the position, it's still hard to select them and say, this is the top candidate for this, you know, particular position. So making sure that our women do get the right kinds of exposures and the right kinds of assignments and the right kinds of experience and the right kind of training for these kind of positions is very, very critical.
You know, Dr. Johnson, given your amazing career history, have you been able to witness a change, a positive change for women in STEM?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I've been really, really happy to kind of witness that up front in the Sustaining Women in STEM Roundtable that I have conducted across the agency and in the federal government, involving the whole federal government, private industry, and academia, bringing all of those communities together to talk about some of the best practices that could be used across the different, you know, lines, across the different communities. I've seen that we have had so many women in very, very key positions. So we've had women CEOs at places like Lockheed Martin, Aerospace Corporation, Pepsi has a woman CEO, and DuPont, and so many other Fortune 500 even, you know, companies that have women CEOs and have kind of broken that ceiling barrier for women. One of the great things about that is so many of these Fortune 500 women are networking with each other. They're successful. They, you know, don't need any help themselves, but they feel obligated to make sure that they, you know, pave the way for those women coming behind them and that they mentor those women to help them to be successful in the future.
So Dr. Johnson, you know, one of the questions I had was really this link between diversity and innovation. You know, an argument, particularly in business, is made that to innovate, you need creative minds. And to do that, you need diverse sort of perspectives at the table. Do you have any comment on that in relation to NASA?
Yes. Yeah, I think that NASA has been in the forefront of that. When you have a really, really impossible goal, when you have something that is really hard to do and something that's very, very challenging and not something that people can just figure out on their own, the best way for you to innovate is to bring the best and the most diverse minds to the table. Because if you have a groupthink, which happens frequently when you have all the same people that look alike, they have the same life experiences, they have the same training and background, those kind of people will come up with very similar solutions when you're trying to address a problem. The way that you come up with unique solution sets is to bring someone from a totally different vantage point to the table and throw that question at them, and they're not accustomed to thinking about things the same way that you do. And you'll find them asking questions that those people that have been doing it that other way the whole time, they'll say, why didn't we even think about that? So many women, I'll say in the world, you'll find that there are so many women that are so capable. They're very, very smart. They're very sharp. They're good at what they do. What they are lacking is the opportunity to sit across the table from those other minds that are coming up with creative solutions. So I think that, you know, if anyone wants to make the kinds of leaps and advances in their organizations, it is paramount that they bring diversity to the table if they want to innovate.
And it's evident that NASA has been an incredible workplace for its employees. For 6 years, NASA has taken the top spot in the annual Best Places to Work in the federal government. You know, Dr. Johnson, given all the steps that NASA has taken to support women in STEM, do you think there's anything companies could learn from this?
Yeah, so we have been doing so many things, and I could take, you know, the next hour kind of explaining to you what companies and organizations really have to do to succeed. But if you take a look at the different categories that are included in this employee viewpoint survey, one of the things is effective leadership. And under effective leadership, all of the employees have to vote about whether they agree that empowerment, the leaders are empowering them to do their job. Another one is fairness. Are your leaders fair in the way that they make decisions? In all of these questions that were asked in all of those categories, NASA came in first place in terms of employees saying, yay, verily, our leaders do empower us to get this job done. Yea, verily, our leaders are fair in the way that they make assignments, the way that they make decisions for our employees. And then you look at the pay. 71% versus 60.8% of the people were satisfied, you know, regarding the pay. And we have a very good performance-based rewards and advancement program that is certified through OPM. So we can pay our employees a bit more than other federal government agencies can afford to pay their employees because they're not in one of those certified systems. We go the extra mile at NASA because the employees come first. The other thing that they are asked about is work-life balance. And for us, you know, we have had a 73% satisfaction rate in work-life balance because we have a very extensive teleworking program. And we are always stressing to our employees the importance of them spending the quality time with family, because when you are happy in your home life, you bring 150% of yourself to the work life, and you can be, you know, performing a whole lot better at work when you're happy at home. And so, you know, we do lots of things helping the employees. We provide training and development for them to grow themselves as an individual, because as they're growing as an individual, they're contributing to the whole mission of our agency. Teamwork, innovation, strategic management, all of these kind of areas. I mean, and there are a lot of things that we do in all of these areas to help. We also have advisory committees because we want to hear from the individuals that have individual concerns. So we have an advisory committee for women. We have African American advisory committee, a Hispanic advisory committee, diversity and inclusion advisory committee, and a program focused on diversity and inclusion. And so I could go on all day on the kinds of things that we do to create an environment that makes our employees really happy to be here, and they don't want to go other places because it's just a really cool place to be.
You know, a lot of those initiatives that you just mentioned are fantastic for increasing diversity and inclusion.
I just wondered, though, at your time at NASA, was there one that was specific to women?
Well, I would say that I think one of the most impactful things that we've had is our Women Advisory Committee. So there is a committee of women that advise the top leaders of our center. They have monthly or quarterly meetings with the senior leadership team, and they express any kinds of concerns that they have that would impact work life and impact the ability for women to be sustained in this kind of environment. So I think one of the major initiatives that any organization needs to do is to engage that community and to listen to them, to hear what their concerns are, and have them come up with creative solutions to address what their concerns are. And you can either accept or not accept the recommendations that they make, or you can have them to modify those recommendations so you can get what you want out of it, and that community, whatever it is, can also feel a sense of satisfaction. So I think the major thing is engaging that community, hearing them and hearing them well, and then doing something about it.
So Dr. Johnson, look, I mean, we're almost at the end of our show, but I just have to ask this question. You know, when you were watching the movie Hidden Figures, did you look at it and think, that's me?
Yeah, I definitely resonate with the Hidden Figures women because I was raised at Langley, the same place that those women came from. That's where I started my career, and that's where I was up until I moved to NASA headquarters. So I definitely see myself, and NASA has identified me as a modern figure. So that's one of the reasons that I've traveled around the country doing openings for that movie and talking to the audiences about, you know, setting up the movie, letting them know, you know, what they're going to see, encouraging the young girls that are going to see that movie, showing them, you know, how they should see themselves even in that movie. Not just me seeing myself, but them seeing themselves in it as well.
Finally, last question, I promise, Dr. Johnson. I just wondered, you know, if you reflect on your career to date and you look at everything that you've achieved, do you have any advice for young women who want a career in STEM or who would like to work at NASA?
I have done things really, really well throughout my career, so it's not like there are many things at all that I would change. But I would say to my younger self and to other younger people that one of the most important things that you can do is not try to go through life as an island, not try to suffer in silence when you're experiencing things that you feel are not right in the workplace, or if you're not getting the support that you need or whatever else. It's never good to just sit back and suffer in silence. Networking is one of the most important things that you can do. Engaging with other women, engaging with other men who have a track record of supporting women is very, very important, because those people can help you to walk around those landmines that are going to exist. They can open up doors for you that you could never open up on your own. And so you go so much further in life, so much faster, if you don't try to do it on your own.
Dr. Johnson has shared so many examples of how we can support women in STEM. My major takeaways are that if organizations have an impossible goal and need to innovate, then they can only really do this by having diverse minds at the table. And if you're a woman wanting a seat at that table, then one of the most important things that you can do is to get the support you need. And networking is key to this. As Dr. Johnson says, you will go so much further, so much faster in life if you don't try to do it alone. On this segment of Fairy Godboss Insights, we're going to be touching on a really important topic, loneliness. According to a recent Cigna study, over 20,000 adults in the United States suffer from loneliness, but the age group where this is most acute is for people aged 18 to 20. This age group reported feeling like the people around them were not really with them. They felt shy, and they also felt that nobody really knows them well.
Now, while I'm sure technology and social media have a role to play here, the research actually found that the number one thing you can do to beat loneliness is to focus on the quality of interactions you have rather than the number of people that you share those interactions with. If you want to beat loneliness, it seems that quality really trumps quantity. If you'd like to learn more about this research, please check out fairygodboss.com. So I really hope you all enjoyed our episode today. If you haven't already, please follow me on Instagram for updates. And I also post stories on my LinkedIn, so please connect there with me too. Thanks again for tuning in, guys, and I'll catch you all again next week.
She Innovates is produced by Human Group Media, a company that inspires people to do good through the power of audio storytelling. This podcast is made possible by SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities, to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.